goals.
All right. So a series of classes this summer we're planning on giving on the topic of issues that come up in the workplace. So one of the issues, just as a matter of introduction, I actually, for the last few years at this point now, I've been giving some classes in the School of Business on this topic, on workplace halachas, in order to prepare the students for inevitable issues. And there was a suggestion that we go through some of them here this summer. So that's what it's based on. The first topic I wanted to talk about is the issue that comes up very often, where someone finds himself at a business meeting in a non-kosher restaurant. What to do, how to deal with it, what can you do, what can't you do, etc. The major issue that you have is what we call Maris Ayin. We start with the Mishnah in Shigalim. The Mishnah tells us, when a person goes to collect the tzedakah from the tzedakah pishka, basically, in short, they should not walk in wearing something that has pockets. What's the reason for that? Because if the guy goes and he becomes poor afterwards, they're going to turn around and say, ah, you see, he stole from this, from the stock of Pushka, and because of that, a Kaddish Baruch Hu took away his money. Oh, Shema Yashra, maybe he'll become rich. Right? So he says that, in fact, one way or the other, if he becomes rich, they'll say he must have stolen. If he becomes poor, they'll say he must have stolen. Such are people. So, therefore, he says, Lefisha Adam Tzar Ratzei Sidei Briyas Kedar Shere Tzar Ratzei Sidei Hamakom. In general, I might turn around and I'll say, listen, what do I care? Let people talk. A Kaddish Baruch Hu knows that I walked in to count the tzedakah with pockets, and I counted it all, and I didn't take a penny with me. So people start rumors, so people will talk. What do I care? What's the big deal? So the Mishnah says, no, you can't say that. Right? He says, why? Lefisha Adam Tzarech Ratzei Shidei Habriyas Kedara Shei Tzarech Ratzei Shidei Hamakom. A person has to be clean, not only in the eyes of God, but even in the eyes of fellow man. Shnemar, v'hiyisim nikiyim me'Hashem u'mi Yisrael. As the Pasuk says, we'll get up to it in a few weeks from now, right? You have to be clean, not in the only in the eyes of Hashem, but even in the eyes of other Jews. Similarly, there is a Pasuk in Mishlei, in Proverbs, that means that I should be looked positively upon, not just by God, but by man as well. So we see here that there is this idea that I cannot do something. Of course, I can't do something that's wrong, but I can't even do something that would be perceived to be wrong by other people. This Mishnah is quoted in our Gemara, in Pesachim. Says the Tanya, Gabbai Tzedakah Shein Lahem Aniyim Lacho. What if I have the Gabbai Tzedakah? So I collect the money, right? We collect X amount of dollars. We have this from, let's say we're talking about the case of, well, let's say we're dealing with a case of Moel Shechitim, right? So Moel Shechitim people, Baruch Hashem, everyone gives the money generously. And we go around and we have enough money to cover whoever needs money for matzahs, etc. And then we have leftovers. What do we do with the additional money that we collected? What? That's kosher Pesach. Very important. Right? So, Gabi Tzok She'im Lev Anin Lachok. So here he has money. Now he has. So what does he do? So I go around to collect. I go around to the pushka. I get a bunch of singles. I get a bunch of dimes. I get a bunch of nickels. So I don't want to be carrying all this. So I'll be a nice guy. You know, I could always use quarters to do the laundry. I could always use singles, you know, for you know, to tip the guy who parks my valet. So what am I? So I'll do, okay. So I'll put in the 20 and I'll take out the small money. And it'll be, everyone will win. I'll have the small money, right? And therefore, you know, to hold the money for the aniyim, they'd rather get a 20 than a pile of loose change. No. Partim la'achirim vein partim la'atzman. What I should do is I should have someone else give the 20. I shouldn't do it myself. No self-dealing. Similarly, Gaboy Tamchui. At the time of the Gemara, there were people who gave out money, and there were also people who gave out food. What if I have leftover food? Right? What if we buy matzahs for Pesach, and we give them out, and we have 5 pounds left? So what do I do with that? So I'll say, you know what? I'll be a nice guy. Instead of me buying matzahs, I'll buy from Tomchei, and then Tomchei will have cash. Mara says no. Right? Mochin la acherim, sell it to someone else. Ve'en mochin la atzmo. Why? Mishum shenamar ve'yisim nikiyim e'ashem yisrael. Since that I have to be clean, that means that I don't want to give anyone a reason for a rumor. Right? Right? People say, yeah, very nice. The rabbi puts in a five, he takes out six singles. Right? Right? Very nice. You know, he went and there was leftover matzahs. And all of a sudden, he thinks that, you know, hand matzahs worth $3 a pound. So therefore, the Gemara tells us you can't do it. Why? It's the same idea. There's an idea of a yisem nikiyim, that you have to be clean in all of your dealings. One more case, and that is the Tosefta. There are other cases as well. We're just not going to go through them. The Tosefta talks about when somebody gives paya. So there are certain agricultural gifts that are given to the poor people. Leket, shitla, and paya. Meaning that when a person is collecting their wheat, if they leave some amount falls down, if a certain amount, they left, or, you know, in those, what? And the corners of the field, right? Those are the three. I leave them for the poor people, right? We all remember not that long ago we read Rus. That's how Rus was making her money. She was going out to the fields in order to glean, as they say, that which was left over. So the Tosefta says, you got it. Really, which corner do I leave? You know, let's say I've got a square field. There's four corners. Is there any rules which corner I should leave? I'm sure they are, but one will eat on pay a little bit self. Leave it at the end of the field. Why? If they gezlem him, if they bitol on him, if they maras ha'ayin, if they haramayin. You got to leave that quarter. Why? There are several reasons. One reason is, if I don't announce where I'm going to leave it, it could be any quarter. So the poor people will show up at the beginning of the day. Maybe it's a front corner, right? Then they'll wait for another corner. They're going to spend their whole day waiting for nothing. That's it. Another reason is they give multiple reasons, but one is people are going to show up and they'll see that, yeah, let's say I left the first corner and then Neim came and they cleared it out and someone's going to watch me harvest my entire field, and I'm not going to leave a corner. Why? Because I left, but people don't know that I left the first one. So therefore, they've said specifically, you've got to leave the last one, so no one should come by and think that, oh, you never gave.
So we define the last one as some rational harvesting scheme that leaves, you know, you will go from the north to the south. Because
correct, whatever it is.
For whatever reason, like you want to end up at the day at the end of
right, you know, whether it's either
closer to your barn,
right? If I may want to work towards the barn, you know, I want to start by the barn. This isn't my area of expertise, but whatever reason is, the final corner should be left over. You have this idea. There is an interesting question. So, is this idea that not only shouldn't I sin, but I shouldn't even look bad? Is that a biblical commandment or is that a rabbinic commandment? Is this one of the why? What? Right. So Jenny points out that, well, it sort of seems to be biblical, right? It says in the Bible, be yisem nikiyim, right? So isn't that easy? So Moshe Feinstein says, by the way, not so fast. He said, mitzad asmo shemechayev shelo rasos dvarim sheyach shedu. Vegan echem etzaim shetzorach aniach peyev besof sadeh b'shem chishada, etc. Imkein imtzor rachor ezer geder iser shayach yos bozeh dezeh atzmo hua iser. So he says that in his opinion, this is biblical, that the person, that you don't sit around giving reasons for it, etc. The Torah says don't look bad. And being that if it's biblical, there's no real discussion about this. Other people disagree and say it's rabbinic. How could it be rabbinic? Isn't there a pasuk?
Yeah, but the exact details of what you're supposed to do, like just what you discussed, the last quarter, are clearly not in the Chumash.
Right, so Jenny said the magic word, and that is asmachta. There are times out there where there is no pasuk that says one way or the other, right? That really is it's rabbinic. However, the rabbis will point you to a pasuk, say, this is a way to remember this is an allusion to it. But still, at the end of the day, it's only Durabbanan.
It emanates from the numerous and penumbras.
Something like that. So we have here an idea that we have, that there's something called, what we call, here of Yisim Nikim, we call it Maris Ayin, that a person is told that they have to act in a way that not only, of course, does not violate any of the commandments, but does not even seem to violate any of the commandments, right? It's very interesting. I think, Jenny, you're the one who asked me about the Moshe Yes song, The Miser of the Town. Was that you? Right? So there is a song by Moshe Yes, a Jewish musician who passed away a while ago at a relatively young age. In fact, when A.B. Rottenberg was here for the weekend, we were discussing how much he admired Moshe Yes. And in fact, on his latest album, there is a dedication to him. He says very nice things about him, etc. And he has a song called The Miser of the Town, right? That there was this guy who was so rich and he never gave any charity, etc., etc. And then, you know, and the guy on his deathbed, they said to him, listen, you know, unless you give $1,000 to charity right now, we're not going to bury you. So he says, feh, I don't care, do whatever you want. And then they end up with a question, you know, this Shlomo Kalbach tells the story a lot better, but and what to do with the guy. Eventually, after some period of time, they decide to bury him. And the rov of the town gets a knock on the door. It's the local almana, and she says, I don't have any food for Shabbos. And the rabbi says, you know, okay, but let me ask you, what? You've been an almana for a while. You've been a, why suddenly now? She says, I don't know, but up until this week, every Thursday night, I got an envelope, and the envelope had money, and it took care of me. Then another person came in, and eventually it became clear that we are wiser about the miser of our town, as the saying goes. So that all of a sudden it became clear that this person wasn't actually a miser, but he was a hidden tzaddik. And so Jenny asked me, miser, smart idea, dumb idea? Right? So it seems that it's a violation of Hoyter Moshe Vadin Daraisa. Right? People were choshed him for good reason. It would seem that he was a very miserly person. He was very cheap, etc. And as wonderful as it is to be a generous person who doesn't take credit for that which they've given, one would imagine he should have just given a normal amount and given more on top of that quietly. So this is the idea. Now, why do we raise this question now? Because this is the question that we have to deal with when we're talking about walking into a non-kosher restaurant. Someone sees me in a non-kosher restaurant. What are they going to think? So one possibility is they'll say, well, it's under rabbinic supervision. I see the rabbi supervising it right now, right? And therefore, in fact, that would be okay. That's one possibility. So is that the reason that the Yisim Nikim is problematic? It's because people think that it's okay? Why not? Well, that's not true. You know, you walk by, you see a guy with a yarmulke there. So, Sean. Right. Oh, I don't know if it's good, but it's kosher. Yeah. Right. Panama is a whole different story, but you know, but the truth of the matter is, Marsha makes a very nice point, but it seems to not really fit in because we have spoken before about the idea of, you know, the guy walks in to collect the tzedakah with pockets. That's a violation of what we call Maris Ayin. Is it because they'll think it's okay to steal?
No, but then might hurt his reputation.
Correct. It seems very much so that it sounds like the issue is not that they're going to think it's okay. They'll think, what kind of rabbi goes and eats at a non-kosher restaurant? Like, what kind of business is this? Right. I had a friend who told me a joke many years ago. He said there was a guy named Yankel. And Yankel, you know, he sat in the shtiebel every day. And Yankel lived a simple life. But one time he figured, you know what? I can't handle it anymore. So he goes to Paris, goes to France, goes to Paris, goes into a treif restaurant and he orders a chazer, a real chazer with an apple in the mouth. He's about to eat it, and his friend Shmuel walks by. Shmuel says, "Yankel, what are you doing in there?" He says, "Oh, they saw Iska Pachka and apple here in France. I just they so overdo an apple. I just ordered an apple. Look what they put on it." So the truth of the matter is, there are two logical possibilities as to why this is problematic, right? One possibility is what Marcia said, that people will think that it's okay because I'm doing it, right? Another possibility is that, no, people won't think it's okay, but they'll think I'm a bad person. And that's problematic as well. Oddly enough, there is a problem here because Rashi chooses which opinion? Both. If you look at the Gemara increases in number 5, it says, Amar Rav dam dogim shekinsu aser. He said that in general, a person's not allowed to eat the blood of an animal, right? That's why we salt it, right? When you shech the cow, you have to salt the meat. You shech the chicken, you salt the meat, right? You take a piece of salmon, do you have to salt it?
No.
I mean, unless you're making lox. But, but halachically, there's no reason why you would have to salt it. So the question, right? So you're allowed to, but the blood of the fish will still be in it. The answer is, fish blood is, you're allowed to eat. You're not allowed to eat bird blood, like chicken. You're not allowed to eat animal blood, like a fish. Like a cow. But you're allowed to eat fish blood. That is the halacha. Now, that being said, the Gemara says that I'm allowed to eat fish blood, but let's say I took fish and I squeezed out the blood and I have a cup of it now. Can I drink that?
No.
Why not?
Myriad times.
So you could have written the Gemara, Jeff. Amar Rav dam dog chitzu asur. Mesa dam 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 chagovim mutter afilo chalchim. So what do you mean it's asur? What do you mean allowed to? We said that you don't have to salt it. You can drink the milk. That's a difference. If I just have some on the fish, that's fine. But when I clicked, it's a problem. Why is it a problem? So Rashi said, I'm a rabbi. I said, you know what? A little low on the protein. Give me a cup of blood. Now, of course, I know it means fish blood. Sit down there, breakfast of champions. Down it, perfect, right? So people say, oh my goodness, you can drink blood, right? So what's Rashi saying? What's the reason for why is Maris Ayin problematic? Marsha's reason, because people will think it's okay. However, Rashi himself and other Gemara says the opposite. Rashi and the Gemara that we discussed in number 2 says, a mochim la'atzman, right, that you're not allowed to go and sell the extra matzahs to yourself, because they will think that I cheated it. I paid too little. So there are two approaches to why it is problematic, and there might be differences between the two approaches, and we will discuss that going forward. Now, with that being said, so we... just to answer the issue with Rashi, one could very well argue, which is probably the right answer, that they're both true. There's two reasons why you shouldn't do Maris Ayin. In certain cases, it's because people will think that it's okay. In other cases, it's because people think you did something wrong. Exceptions to the rule. There's a pre-chadash that has a radical exception that we probably don't file. The pre-chadash says that the Gemara has certain cases. Well, we read about some of them when it comes to collecting stuff. We spoke about the case where we have... About the fish blood here. What if, let's take another case. What about, I had fleishigs tonight, and now they bring out a par of ice cream. Is that a problem with Maris Ayin?
Kosher.
Everything's kosher, but I had meat. Now I'm going to have milk.
Ice cream, that's okay.
Right?
Yeah, but what if somebody comes by and says, oh, look at him. He just ate that pig with the apple in it. Now he's eating ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
Where would this be, in a restaurant?
Maxine.
Right here. It ends up that Graham was successful in finding ice cream, and we would be eating it right now. So according to the Pri Chodesh has an amazing statement. The Pri Chodesh says, when it comes to Maros Ayin, only things that were listed in the Gemara are Maros Ayin. We don't start making up our own. That's a very, very radical statement, and it's a statement that is probably not followed. The Ramah has a second heter, and this heter is in fact questionable, but definitely not as questionable as the first one. The Gemara is talking about a very interesting case. It's talking about mother's milk. Mother's milk is pink, in case you're ever curious. So the question is, can I cook with it? So the Shulchan Aruch tells us in number 9, Asu levasho b'chol of isha b'nei maris ayin. Not allowed to, it's maris ayin. B'nofal toch hatashel batol vein sarach shir. However, if accidentally some fell in, you don't have to throw out the cholent. Ramah says, v'nira lefizeh, the chol shekein da asu levasho lechachil b'chol of tamea, o basar tamei b'chol of tar, v'davka basar behema, avo ba'of t'rabonel in rachush. The Ramah's amazing statement. He says, you know what? This is only a problem of meat and par of milk. It is, what about chicken and par of milk? So, lo sevasho gadiba chalei bimo only refers to animals. It doesn't refer to birds. The fact that we eat, that we don't eat chicken and milk is not biblical. That is only rabbinic.
Right. And in fact, Rabbi Yosef argued against it in the Mishnah.
Right. We don't follow that opinion, but right. But, we,
but there was a time when the Jews of the Galilee continued to do that, and the rest of the Jews.
Right, but for the last stopped. For the last few millennia, though, I think.
No, we gave up on that.
Right. So, what if? So the Ramah makes an amazing statement. What if the people think what I'm doing is only us is something that's us? Or they think it's not that I ate meat and now they think I'm drinking milk, but I eat chicken and now they think I'm drinking milk. That is only aser mid the rabbanon, and since it's aser mid the rabbanon, it's what we call gezerah legezerah. Assuming that this is rabbinic, right? Right. So a lot of time, right, we are afraid that people are going to if they see X, they'll accidentally do Y, right? Asu siyag l'Torah. So here we're concerned that people might accidentally eat chicken and milk, but chicken and milk itself is only the rabbanon. So therefore, the Ramah says that this idea of maris ayin only applies to biblical. Isurim, it doesn't apply to rabbinic Isurim. That is number 2. Number 3, which is probably the heter that is best known and the most important one, and it deals with cannabis, which is always good. The Shulchan Aruch talks about shatnez. Shatnez, you can have linen and wool together. He writes, "Ein asur mishum kilayim elot semer rechelim ve'elim impishtan." Wool from sheep or goat together with linen is a problem. In fact, camel hair and linen is allowed. Right?
But you don't do linen.
The reason we don't do it is because your cashmere is very rarely, it's purely cashmere. Avol, semer gemalim, but semer arnovim. But if it is camel hair or it is rabbit fur, but notzer shall ezim v'chol sharminim mutar bepishim. Anything else is okay. V'chein cannabis, but semer gefen v'chol sharminim mutar mafil but semer rechem ve'elim. Similarly, if I'm going to use hemp or if I'm going to use cotton, that's fine. Even if I'm mixing it with sheep wool. The Chachamim also named Maris Ayin Meshi in Tzemer, Lefi Shedoma Repishtim. However, there's something called Meshi, right, which is some type of what, right, that is similar enough that they in fact said that's Maris Ayin. The Chinchach who minshe gadol bekar chayayam, similarly the things that grow on the side of the river, Al Avanim she. Shebiyam v'doma letzemer, right? Other things as well, right? Also, b'nei maris ayin in pishtim. Inna meshi motzli b'neinu v'akol makirim bo l'fichach ein bo mishum maris ayin umuta in semer v'in pishtim. So nowadays, the Shulchan Aruch says, in the time of the Gemara, people weren't familiar with this, and therefore there'd be a problem maris ayin. But nowadays, people know. So nowadays, if people understand that this is not a problem, there's no more Maris Ayin. So therefore, so again, a lot of examples like that, right? As when non-dairy creamer started 50 years ago, right? People were not familiar with it. And therefore, the assumption was that when you served it, you have to serve it in the container. So people would understand that you're not serving, it's not dairy, it's not creamer, etc. As the years have gone by, everybody knows about non-dairy creamer, right? Same thing with Parv ice cream. When Tofutti first came out, they would tell you, you have to serve it at the table from the container. Nowadays, doesn't apply anywhere. Everybody understands Shabbos clocks, right? When we first came out, lights go on, lights go off. Everybody knows Shabbos clocks, right? So therefore, this is the third heter. And the third heter is that the times, they can change, right? When it gets to the point where no one reasonable will think that what you're doing is a sin, it stops being Maris Ayin.
That is a new phenomenon.
Yeah.
Now we have some restaurants serve land burgers, impossible burger.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about McDonald's, but that's all they serve. Mm-hmm. Don't you walk in and order one? Is it the only pasta that it's okay to eat?
I mean, it's no different than the old question of the vegan restaurants.
Yeah.
Right? So, but obviously, the level of hashkafah.
This is going to become more and more popular as time goes by, and there's more places like.
Right.
Do.
Right. So I think that, you know, there are issues involved. There's an establishment by YU. And the rabbi who gives the hashgacha there has an opinion that on Shabbos, he doesn't walk in to check. Doesn't walk in to check because it's Maris Ayin that he's walking in. Yeah. Therefore. So therefore, I, as you know, so after Shabbos, he comes in, he looks at the papers, and he sees this is... Here's the receipts from what they ordered and what they had, and he checks. That's what it is. Shine. I remember saying, but how do I know the guy didn't eat his ham sandwich behind the counter? He knows the rabbi's not coming today, right? Right? How do they know he's not using his whatever? He cut the sandwich in half using the restaurant's knives, right? So you think there is a need for hashgacha, even if I would know that everything here is internally kosher. So these are the basics, and based on this, let's discuss the question of going to a non-kosher restaurant. So I'm on a business trip, and what am I going to do? Right, I'm meeting with clients. Right, there's 10 of them. There's one of me. I have no control over what restaurant we're going to. They want to go to the local non-kosher restaurant. So, of course, I'm very limited in what I can order. I can maybe order a salad. I can maybe order, you know, a piece of melon, a cup of Coke, etc. Right? I remember one time many years ago when I was in law school, I applied for a position in California. And we did an interview, and then they flew me out for a callback. And I always used to tell everybody when I went for an interview that, listen, you know, whatever you do. But if you wanted to take me out for a meal, note I have kosher dietary requirements. So in New York, they're very used to it. In California, they weren't so used to it. So they took me to a treif restaurant. They never got the message. So I figured, no, what am I going to do? So I figured, oh, fine, I'll order the Coke. It's one of these fusion nouveau places. So basically it was like, you know, a piece of melon with chazer, you know, a salad with chazer, cup of Coke with chazer, you know what I mean? Right? You know, basically they brought out the napkins and they were squealing. You know, it was just. So I remember saying to them, to the waiter, and I'll have nothing. Thank you very much. So, I mean, you get stuck sometimes. What are you going to do? Okay, but the question comes to as follows: a man goes to the restaurant. Take off your yarmulke or keep it on?
It's a very big problem. It's a big problem. It happens all the time.
Right. This is This is
a, if you leave your yarmulke on, you're sending the wrong message because of Jews. They might pass by and think this is a kosher place. That is the yarmulke is eating.
Right.
Thank you, yarmulke.
Oh. It's all Rabbi. It was based on that. Right? Right. So the question it comes down to, we said that there are two reasons for Maris Ayin. Depending which reason is the right reason is what you should do. If I'm concerned about leading somebody astray that they'll think it's kosher, so I should take off my yarmulke. If people, if I want to make it clear that I'm just here on a business meeting and don't think anything wrong, right? If I'm sitting in a shayfer restaurant without a yarmulke, oh, for sure that people think I'm eating non-kosher. So this question of as to which one it is becomes very practical in the question of whether or not a person should wear a yarmulke. And if we think that the main concern is leading people astray, best thing to do would be take off your yarmulke. If you're right, if your concern is that people will think lowly of you, right, then in fact it would be appropriate to keep your yarmulke on, despite the fact that you're sitting in a non-kosher restaurant. Now, what if I am going out on a business trip to Butte, Montana, and there's no Jew as far as the eye can see? Nobody here is going to walk by. No one's going to see anything. No one's. Do the rules still apply?
They may apply, but their application may be different.
How so?
Well, you may not be worrying about a Jew thinking ill of you and so on. But you also don't want to leave. There's a tourist. There's the wraps are coming from
so again,
New York. They're on their way to Yellowstone. Right,
stopping in B'nai Butte.
Yeah.
So again, but if I'm concerned about the wraps, I'm concerned from both sides.
Right.
If I'm not concerned about the wraps, I'm not concerned at all. So the Gemara in number 11 makes an important statement, and he says as follows. If there is a problem with Maris Ayin, it doesn't matter if there are people there or not. Even if I think there's nobody around.
Even if you're in walls within walls.
Right. Even if I'm in a closet inside an apartment, inside, it doesn't apply. It's interesting. Rabbi Schefter tells a story, I probably told it here before, that there was a professor visiting from Eretz Yisrael teaching in YU for a semester or two. Right? We have this all the time. We have visiting professors. Right? Yossi probably knows this better, but the way it works in most jobs in Israel is you get Shnat Shabbaton.
Right.
Instead of having
year,
right, instead of getting a retirement plan, you get Shnat Shabbaton once every 7 years. And the idea is you get another job during that year and you pull in two paychecks, and one of them you save. So therefore, YU is a good place to go. If you teach Jewish studies in a university and you're very respected, it's a win-win. YU picks up a world-renowned professor for a year, and the professor picks up world-renowned dollars for the year. So everybody ends up being happy. So if Schefter had one of them living in the building next to him, the guy finished his Shnat Shabbaton, he was going back to Israel, and Rabbi Schefter's going by the elevator, speaking to one of his neighbors, and he said, yeah, it's too bad he's going. She said, yeah, but he wasn't really religious, that man. She said, what do you mean he wasn't really religious? Daven three times a day, put on tefillin, Shabbos. He didn't keep Shabbos. Rabbi Schefter can't figure out what this woman's talking about. You mean he didn't keep Shabbos? Talmud Chacham. So it ends up as follows, that this guy had his apartment. There was no, he faced a wall. Happens in New York often, right? Your window looks upon a blank wall, right? On Yom Tov Sheni, the guy figured, usually I wouldn't do malacha, but mamish, there's nobody here. So he turns his lights on and off, thinking that, right? Ends up, the woman lived below him, and so the light's going on and off against the wall. She didn't know from Yom Tov Sheni, she's Shabbos, Yom Tov, the guy's a Machal Shabbos, he's an Oisvarf, done.
No, she was Machal.
What? So that's what Rabbi Schefter says. Don't get so sure that, no one will find out. This case is the proof. Now, so therefore, that's what the Shulchan Aruch says, that there is, that even if, it doesn't make a difference if I'm sitting in the middle of town or if I'm sitting out in the middle of nowhere, if it's a problem of Maris Ayin in one place, it's a Maris Ayin in every place.
Is it Maris Ayin person, or is it like Sfardim Tachlon versus Ashkenazi Tachlon? I'm worried about the Torah. I'm worried that God's, you know, the dom.
Right, in this case, you're worried. You're not worried about God. Yisim kem me'ashem umi Yisrael. You're worried about the people. That's
is what would be the same.
Right. Ma'ayom ru hagoyim.
Exactly.
Right. That's it's. I remember one time I got a call from some fellow. I don't know how he got to me. I really have no idea how he got to me, and he said that, you know, he's interested in becoming more religious, and you know, people don't believe that he's Jewish, but his mother died up in Albany, and she had a tahara, and she was buried in the Jewish cemetery, right? So obviously they wouldn't have buried her if she wasn't Jewish, so clearly that should prove that I'm Jewish. I said, sounds right, but I'll see what I can do. So I picked up the phone, I called up a rabbi I know in Albany, and I said, can you do me a favor? Can you look into this guy? And the guy looked into it. He said, the woman's never had a tahara. The woman's buried in a cemetery where nobody checks, not in the firm one. She's buried in the communal one, right? And in fact, the fact that they wouldn't bury her, that indicates the exact opposite. So I talked to this guy, and I said, listen, I did the research for you, and no, I am not willing to do that. So he started getting belligerent with me. What are you yelling at me? Not one of my balabatim. We'll give you the right to yell at me. You're not paying for these rights. He says, oh, what matters is what God thinks. It doesn't matter what you think. So I said, okay. And God thinks you're a guy. Have a nice day. On behalf of myself and God. Right? But the statement was wrong on many levels. One of the levels was because, no, it matters what the people think also. That's exactly what we're saying here. Now, the Shulchan Aruch quotes this. We'll just skip ahead a little bit to 19. The Mishnah Berurah limits this idea of Chadrei Chadarim. Yes, the Maris Ayin applies, but it does not apply to the same extent as it does elsewhere. So he says, Hatam d'lo choku chabam mitakanosam. The Chachamim made a takana, which is interesting, indication that it's the Rabbanan. And therefore, they said, you're not allowed to do this. They didn't make any special rules. What if this? What if that? Etc. He says, only if it's a Maris Ayin of an Isser Daraisa. But if it's a Maris Ayin of a Dir, if it's only an Isser Darabanan, then Chadrei Chadarim would work. Now, if you remember, the Ramah said that you never have to worry about Maris Ayin by an Issa D'Rabbanan. The Mishnah Berurah says we don't paskin that way, but an Issa D'Rabbanan, Chadrei Chadarim, that you don't have to worry about. If it's in private, not that way. So this is the general, so again, this question as to why is Maris Ayin problematic is the basic question of how do you deal with this? Yes, you can go to, if you need to go to a non-kosher restaurant, you can go to a non-kosher restaurant. It's interesting, I told the guys, and I said, in the few years that I worked, well, I used to work, Baruch Hashem, I don't anymore. But when I used to be a lawyer, right, I never once had to go to a non-kosher restaurant because I had this trick where I always got them to agree to go to my place. And I had these two words I would say, and they'd go for it every time. I would say, I'll pay. Game set. Oh, here we go, buddy. Your place it is. But that doesn't always work. That's a problem. So you go, but the question is, how do you handle it? Yarmulke on, yarmulke off, depending on what the concern is. There is a modern question that comes up a lot more often, and we'll just end with that. We'll just discuss it outside. Is I remember that in my days in work, we already had this, and that is what's called matching. Right? I remember this very well, that one time we had a law department outing, and you know, we had all sorts of things to do, and of course, it was a barbecue. And they had steaks, and they had grilled corn, and they had mashed potatoes, etc. And I worked in MetLife. They were extremely, extremely nice to me in terms of Yiddishkeit. And ad kedei kach, it wasn't that they were just going to get me kosher food, but they do what's called matching. They get me the same exact food that everybody else has. Everyone else has a steak, I get a steak. Everyone else gets a corn, I get corn. So therefore, when I walk around, you know, it shouldn't be that everyone else has burgers and steaks, and I'm sitting there, you know, with my Bornstein Airline meal. you know, right? You know, I have an omelet from Shisha Shimei Bereshis. You know, that's so that's, it's very thoughtful. It's very nice that they do that. However, in terms of practically, it becomes an issue because the goyim end up eating the kosher food, right? The line's shorter, looks just as good, maybe sometimes even looks better. The Jews never get the food. Problem number one. But problem number two, which is more related to us, is that's really a marasayan. Right? Everybody's walking around eating steaks. Everybody's walking around eating, you know, potato salad and corn. And I'm eating the same thing on the same paper plates with the same plasticware. And everything looks exactly alike.
And someone could say, look, rabbi's eating.
No. Or more likely is, you know, I remember in law school, there were, so before interviews, you always told them your dietary requirements. So I would say kosher. I had classmates who say no pork or shellfish. That was their kashrus. They wouldn't eat pork. They wouldn't eat, but it didn't have to be kosher. But no pork or shellfish. And these no pork or shellfish people out there, if there was a kosher option, would go for it. If it was all the same, they were. They mumer lahachis. They mumer l'teavon. They did it because that's what they wanted. So therefore, the problem is, if they see me walking around, they assume, he's eating it. It's good. And they're going to go right to the treif steak and right to the treif corn, right? And right to everything else. And they'll say, wow, that's so great. They made the whole thing kosher. I don't believe it. That's so nice of them. And it isn't. Right? So again, this is a modern day issue that comes up, and it happens to be much more problematic. In the event that you have matching, I haven't heard anybody posca this way, but I would not argue with someone who said you should not eat at all in that case. Because the Maris Ayin is so overwhelming. It's not a matter of, you know, you got to be a little bit of an idiot to think it. No. You're eating the same exact food as everybody else, and that's treif. It looks like it. That is a real problem.
But I would assume that what you're talking about,
that's clearly identified.
What? No. Again.
Packaging impact
somehow. Again. You don't understand. Usually, yeah, everyone talks about these things. Like you sit down, the 12 people, and then everyone orders, and the waiter walks in and says, oh, your special order is here.
Because he puts down this, you know, half ton of aluminum foil.
Might have I put this down here, right? Yeah, we're all familiar. Someone have like, let me get the keys to cut the tape off of it. Right? Yeah. Anybody in business has been through that, very unfortunate. So in that situation, you're right. What we're talking about here is, no, there are different stations, and one of them is kosher.
But is it even labeled kosher?
Yeah, at the station, it says kosher. So, but once I take it...
So I assume this is mainly in New York, because it's not so much, as you pointed out, even in California.
Right, so again,
which you said, like, L.A. has the second largest Jewish population. Mm-hmm. So if anywhere else... to be understood, it would be there.
I think Baltimore would be ahead of L.A.
Yeah, well, that's because it's more Jewish per capita than New York.
Right. You know, so you can have that.
So outside of those few places, though.
Correct. What I'm saying is that you're saying that practically.
By the same token, everyone would say, oh, there goes the rabbi. He has steak. He has corn. It came from the kosher station. And we can see the kosher station, which is like.
No, but you can't. I mean, the idea is it happened. It happened. I saw it happen. I saw it happen. People walking around, you know, and making these assumptions. It's not a crazy assumption. Again, the assumption of the Gemara tends to be a lot crazier than this, right? Everyone's got all the same food, and you see the guy eating it. Yes.
So is the distinction that you worried about what
Jews say,
or what?
Well, if you tell me the concern is that they'll think it's kosher, then it's just Jews. If you tell me the concern is that they'll think I'm doing something wrong,
it could be the
goyim. It does say Miyisa the Umi Israel, right? Right. However, the second one says Nimtzachim B'Sechel Ubnei Ubnei Adam. So you know that's why. In that, it might be what to talk about, but overall, it's really more of a Jew concern, and because of that, so again, this is something that going out into the workplace.
Is it more common or less? mean, as this the Jewish world somehow becomes more tolerant, more people are and they're not going to do it. So there still is a middle ground, but it's bad. It seems like in the old days it would be a problem. Now people say I'm in or I'm out.
So again, I don't, you know, just to put my foot on the third rail while I'm at it, you know, eating out. People who eat kosher in their house but don't eat kosher outside of the house. Does that still exist?
Yeah,
sure. Right?
I know people.
Okay, right. So isn't that the same thing?
But here's another problem. What about you have Jews who flat out don't eat kosher? And to use old 1950s terms, even eat high treif.
Mm-hmm.
And they're at the same thing. Let's say it's a barbecue and there's a kosher station, mm-hmm. but outside of the kosher station, they have pork.
Lobster, shrimp.
Yeah.
All good stuff. King crab. Right? Right. I mean, so in those cases, they're eating treif either way. You know, that's
yeah, the point is, when the Goyim looked at us, they may not understand the differences and why. Why is it okay?
So again, going forward throughout the summer, we'll have to discuss these things. So let's say next thing we talk about wearing yarmulkes in the office. Okay, so as we'll discuss, I always tell the guys the importance of wearing a yarmulke in the office is to make a statement. Right? If you wear a yarmulke in the office and then you say I've got to leave on Friday at 1 o'clock because it's my Sabbath, they'll understand. If you don't wear a yarmulke in the office and you say, you know, I've got to go, and they'll say, now you find religion. We've got we have something due, and now all of a sudden you find God. So, you know, we'll deal with it going forward. But that's the issue. That's a major issue, and it's interesting to see how it is evolving. All right.
Just okay. Something for that is what about the people who come